The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
In episode 113 of the Guitar Music Theory podcast, I have another installment of How Does This Song Work? Featuring Thunderstruck by AC/DC. Greetings, guitar engineers. Welcome to the Guitar Music Theory podcast. I am your host, Desi Cerna. And today, we're going to analyze another song, Thunderstruck by AC/DC. You're going to get to know the key and the chords. You'll see the scales and modes used to play the main riff and the lead guitar solo. And you might be surprised to find out that Angus Young and his brother Malcolm managed to use a bit of harmonic minor and Mixolydian mode, proving that AC/DC's music is more than just your typical three-chord rock. Most of the rhythm guitar parts played throughout Thunderstruck are quite simple, but there's a lot to learn about tone, technique, and timing. Now, I also made a video for this lesson and posted it to Facebook and YouTube, and they both got blocked. Well, YouTube got completely blocked because of a copyright claim, and then Facebook just muted portions of the video while I was playing clips of the song, and so I ended up pulling the video down because it didn't make sense to watch it when so many portions of it were muted. So I'm going to kind of teach a stripped-down version of it here in the podcast. I will not be playing the actual original recording, so hopefully there's no copyright issues. We'll see, knock on wood. I also have a message from today's sponsor, the Basketball History 101 podcast. Stick around for that. And before we officially dive in, let me direct all of my podcast listeners over to my website, guitarmusictheory.com. Answer the questions I ask you about your playing, and I'll send you free custom video instruction calibrated to your current level. I'll show you what you should specifically be working on right now in order to fill gaps in your playing, move forward, and reach your music goals. Enroll in your free video course now at guitarmusictheory.com. You can click on the link in the podcast show notes. Right, let's dive in. So the song we're taking a look at today is Thunderstruck by AC/DC from the 1990 album The Razor's Edge. Big hit for AC/DC, and this kind of came after they really had had their biggest successes and wrote some of their most memorable songs. And just when you thought that maybe they didn't have any more hits in them, this song came out. And so 1990 was, you know, a little later in AC/DC's career, but I think about this, it's like, okay, well, 1990, that was like over 30 years ago, and AC/DC's biggest hits like Back in Black and some of the albums prior to that, well, that was released like over 40 years ago. So, I don't know, it's amazing, it's amazing how old some good music is, and it's amazing that a song that's over 30 years old, but yet I consider it to be one of the more recent AC/DC songs. I don't know. At any rate, so let's get started just to familiarize yourself with the song. It starts out with this guitar riff that sounds like this. And then later it changes to... All right, so that's kind of the main riff or hook It's what makes this song so identifiable. It's what many aspiring guitar players, dream to play. It's kind of a challenging part. So let's talk about this, like the technique that's involved, how you might develop this technique if you're not able to play it. And let's talk about the guitar tone as well. We will start with that. So Angus Young always played a Gibson SG guitar, and he was plugged into some type of Marshall amplifier. So I'm playing something similar. I have my PRS McCarty 594. And if you're not familiar with that particular PRS model, the construction is very similar to like a Les Paul or an SG. Its scale length is similar. It's got the two-piece bridge like a Les Paul, and it's equipped with two humbuckers with two volumes and two tones, again, just like a Les Paul or an SG is. So very similar. I don't have the stock pickups in here. These are actually Seymour Duncan 59 pickups, which I chose because they're a little bit lower output and they have more clarity than the stock pickups that come in this guitar, although the stock pickups that come in this guitar are really good. They're kind of part of what sold me on the guitar. But as I started using this guitar more and doing some recording, I thought I need something a little bit different. And these pickups actually worked out perfectly. So the Seymour Duncan 59 pickups, I don't want to get too deep into gear talk here, but they are made with Elnico 5 magnets. And that's kind of what gives them a little bit more clarity. Some people don't like that. They think that those magnets are a little too bright. But the reason why I bring that up is because Angus Young was famous for using SG guitars that also had Gibson pickups that used the Elnico 5 magnets. Some versions of Les Pauls and SGs, Gibson used some Elnico 2 magnets. And from what I understand, Angus preferred the so-called T-top pickups, which had the brighter Elnico 5 magnets in it. And so this guitar that I'm playing here actually is just really gets me in the ballpark and sounds very similar. I'm plugged into my Kemper profiling amplifier, and I'm using a profile of a vintage Marshall. Specifically, it's a 1968 Super Lead from a company called Top Jimmy. And this doesn't totally approximate, well, I mean, this does approximate Angus's sound on here, but I can tell that it's not all the way there. But it's close enough. It's, you know, it's very similar. Angus and the rest of the ACD players, well, I guess Angus and his brother Malcolm, who mainly played rhythm guitar and wrote many of the riffs and is really responsible for many of the riffs and the most recognizable parts of AC/DC songs, and Angus added the lead stuff. Since this riff that opens up Thunderstruck is more of kind of a lead thing, from what I read, Angus actually was fiddling around with this idea, and then Malcolm put some rhythm guitar parts behind it, and that's how the song came to be, and I'll be talking more about those rhythm guitar parts. But anyway, I wanted to point out that Malcolm and Angus, they did not use high gain. They did not use a heavy metal sound. They did not use a lot of like distortion. They were using Marshall amplifiers that were either vintage or voiced like a vintage Marshall amplifier that really only had a limited amount of gain. And you're going to see that particularly when we get to the rhythm guitar parts. I'm going to talk about like how surprisingly clean they are. Which you wouldn't think of. If you're playing AC/DC music, you typically think, oh, this is rock music, so we need to crank up the distortion or crank up the gain. Not so fast. So anyway, this would be a fair amount of gain for this particular type of Marshall amp, because it doesn't really have a whole lot of gain on tap, but it's nowhere near the type of gain that you would hear from like Metallica or even like some of Santana's playing. He had a really thick tone with lots of gain. So kind of keep that in mind as you're, if you decide you want to fiddle with this song, that you want to dial in an appropriate tone and you don't want too much gain. I'm on the bridge pickup, by the way. Bridge pickup. So And I've got a little bit of reverb on here, you know. And let's just leave it at that. And let's talk about this part here. So I'm playing along the second string, and I'm using a pedal tone technique, which I talk about in Fretboard Theory Volume 2. And this is where I keep coming back to the open second string B. And then I'm alternating between that and some fretted notes. Of course, it's much faster than that. So that's a pedal tone technique. It's really easily accomplished on the guitar because you can just play off of an open string and just like what's happening here. I believe the term actually gets its origin from organ players who would sustain a pitch with the pedals of an organ using their feet and then use their hands to play over the top of it, hence pedal tone. And that kind of became like a musical composition term. So whenever we are either sustaining a pitch in the bass position and then playing other things that move around it, above it, that's pedal tone. Or when you're doing something like this, where you are playing off of a particular pitch and you're going to other pitches, but you keep coming back to it, in this case B, that's considered pedal tone or pedal point. You might hear that term as well. You can see Fretboard Theory Volume 2 for more information on that. So let's take a look at the specific notes that I'm using and see if we can figure out like why this works together and what's happening in musically. So I've got the open string, second string B, and then I'm also fretting a D sharp at the second fret and a F sharp at the seventh fret. Now, before I tell you what's happening, does that mean anything to you when you hear those pitches? If you guessed that it sounds like a major triad, 1, 3, 5, you are correct. It's a major triad. It actually just makes a B major chord, which is a B, D sharp, and F sharp. So that's what that is. It's basically a B chord. It's a B major chord. And then I'm fretting these notes with my fretting hand fingers at frets 4 and 7, and then I just move the same shape up one fret. Now I'm at frets 5 and 8. So now I'm playing an E and a G, but I'm still going back to the open string, open second string B. So I start out with B, D sharp, and F sharp, and then I go to B, E, G. And can you guess what B, E, and G makes? Think about it. Listen. Maybe your ear figured this out. Maybe you had to think about it, and you're like, wait a minute. B, E, and G. Well, if I changed the order of that, if it was E, G, and B, that's actually an E minor triad. Might be easier to understand that if I put the B up an octave. There you go. That's an E minor triad. So think an E minor chord. So this part here is actually going back and forth between a B major triad and an E minor triad. These are chords. So your ear is actually hearing chords. That's the sound. It sounds like this. Okay, we got B major and E minor. So the next step is, all right, well, gosh, those sound really nice together, but why? What's the relationship there? Can you figure it out? B major to E minor. If you're thinking, hey, this actually sounds similar to Eddie Van Halen's Eruption, you are correct. At the end of that finger-tapping section there, something similar is happening musically here. And what's happening is you're hearing E harmonic minor. So if you think about E, an E minor chord, and then you kind of go to the open position here, and then go to its 5-7 chord, B7. B7 to E minor. That's from the E harmonic minor scale. That raised seventh in the E harmonic minor is D sharp, and it becomes the third in the B chord. So there is a relationship here, a real strong relationship here, because harmonic minor happens all the time in popular styles of music. We're very used to having a minor chord and it having a major or dominant seventh five chord, creating that harmonic minor sound. Now, you might actually consider this to be a mode of harmonic minor, because we actually began on the B and then we went to E minor. So your ear is kind of really hearing B as the starting point here. And if you're using the notes of E harmonic minor, but you are centering on its fifth degree B, that's a type of mode. It's a mode of the harmonic minor scale, and it's called Phrygian dominant. And I talk about this in Fretboard Theory Volume 2 as well. Why is it called Phrygian dominant? I'll give you a quick explanation, I guess, but I don't know how critical it is that you know this right now, but let's think E minor, and it's relative to what? G major. Okay, so let's think about G major. What's its third? One, two, three. Its third is B. If you're in the G major scale and you are using its notes, but you are centering on the third degree B, that's Phrygian mode. If you understand your modes, I introduced them initially in Fretboard Theory Volume 1. You should understand that. Okay, playing off the B would be Phrygian mode if we were using the G scale. So in E harmonic minor, we're playing off of the B, but we've made it major. Or if you put a seventh in there, it's dominant seventh. So B, Phrygian, dominant. That's why it's called that. Did that make sense? If it did, great. If I just totally confused you, don't worry about it. You're probably getting way ahead of yourself with this information. And it's something that will hopefully come together for you over time. As you play more and more music, make sure your playing skills are what you focus on most. In your guitar playing journey, some people get ahead of themselves by trying to like learn a bunch of music theory. You want your playing skills to lead you. So learn songs, and then as you learn songs and they become part of your, you know, repertoire, then you can start to kind of analyze them and fill in with the theory. I think that works best. Some people get a little too ahead of themselves with the theory. Okay, so we've figured out that the beginning of the song here is just a B major to an E minor. And there's a strong connection there because it's creating a harmonic minor or Phrygian dominant, if you want to think about the mode sound. I'm picking all of those notes. I'm alternate picking with my right hand. I'm playing 16th notes, you know, 1-E-enda, 2-E-enda, 3-E-enda, 4-E-enda. You can't hear me tapping my foot, can you? No, you can't, because I didn't turn the little foot tapper up. Whoops, there it is. 1-E-enda, 2-E-enda, 3-E-enda, 4-E-enda. Two measures of each. Okay. This is actually quite tricky, and I'm not even playing it up to tempo. The real song is actually a little bit faster than that. So this part can actually make a great exercise to practice your alternate picking technique. And as you do that, you have to kind of experiment with different ways that you hold the pick and different ways that you position the hand and rest your hand on the guitar strings and where along the second string you pick. Are you picking closer to the bridge pickup or closer to the neck pickup? you kind of have to experiment with these things until you find that position that you're most comfortable with that allows you to pick accurately and cleanly, and also to maintain those 16th notes for some length of time, because this part is actually played for like the whole first 3 minutes of the song or something, which is not an easy feat. In the studio, it wouldn't be as big of a problem because you can overdub and you can cut and paste and that sort of thing. But I watched some live videos of Angus playing this, and by golly, he kept that part going, those 16th notes, for, you know, for a few minutes there, and I was impressed. And, you know, you can say what you will about AC/DC. Sometimes they're not considered to be the most skilled musicians, but the reality is that they were very skilled at what they did and what they did well. And I think, and I actually sat down and tried to play this. We haven't even gotten to the second half of it where he goes into the... That's the part that just keeps going through the song is the... Some of the other parts come in that I'm going to talk about. And I found myself struggling to play that because over time, my hands started to tire and I started to miss some notes, either fretting notes or picking notes. So it's a great exercise. And I actually have something similar in my course, Guitar Picking Mechanics. If you're at that level where, you know, you have good playing skills, you can play lots of songs, you can even pick some leads and stuff like that, but now you're really ready to sharpen your alternate picking technique and kind of really take things to the next level, you can check out Guitar Picking Mechanics. I have some exercises that are actually based on this song and other familiar songs that have some sort of challenging part, challenging in terms of the picking. And I use them as examples and say, let's turn this into an exercise and let me show you how you can sharpen your picking so that you can play these parts more cleanly and faster and that sort of thing.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay, so let's move on here. After the B major and the E minor triads, it changes, and you do this. Okay, so what's happening here? Different notes, it's moving around. You can hear there's kind of a little pattern there. Hear how it's descending. I'm starting on B at the 12th fret now, still all played along the second string. Hearing that little pattern? Oops. Kind of like a little picking sequence where you go down the scale in a little pattern like this, instead of going, you know. And then it ends with. And then you put the open string in between. And you speed it up. So let's take a look at these notes here. These notes are actually spelling out the B Mixolydian mode. And it's obvious to me because I start on B and I go backwards to a flat 7, and then I got a major 6th, I got a 5th, I got a 4th, and I have a 3rd. And well, let's fill in the blank. If I put a second in there, then I realize I got a full B Mixolydian scale, which is like the B major scale, but instead of a major 7th at the end, you have a flat 7th at the end. That's called B Mixolydian mode, or the B dominant scale, because the fifth degree is called the dominant. And it actually comes from the E major scale. It's the fifth mode of the E major scale. So if I play the notes of E major but start on its fifth degree B and play B to B, that's the B Mixolydian mode. And I'm doing that along the second string. And if I do it backwards and put in the, you know, some movement in there, a little kind of sequence or pattern, and there, that's Thunderstruck. Now would be a good time to take a quick break and tell you about today's sponsor, the Basketball History 101 podcast. This podcast brings to life some of the forgotten stories from basketball history. Host Rick LaWiza tells a new story each week from deep in the history of the game. While any story from basketball yesteryear might be featured, the creators of the Basketball History 101 podcast enjoy focusing on the older days of basketball before there were 22 cameras and instant highlights. Each week brings a new tale about a forgotten player, the development of the game, or a fascinating event from the past. The stories go all the way back to the invention of the game in the 1890s, to the barnstorming in the 1920s and 30s, to the creation of the current NBA in the 1940s. As host Rick LaWiza shares his passion and expertise from studying the history of the game for the last 35 years, stories of how basketball has impacted a community or even an entire nation come to life. If you love basketball and its rich history, you're going to love the Basketball History 101 podcast. Or if you're like me and you don't watch much basketball, but you enjoy history and you like learning how things work, then you might love the Basketball History 101 podcast too. Subscribe now at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more, or just click the link in the episode show notes. All right, back to today's lesson. We're talking about the song Thunderstruck by AC/DC. We took a look at the lead guitar riff that Angus Young plays at the beginning of the song. And then his brother Malcolm Young comes in and adds some rhythm guitar to it. It sounds like this. Or something like that. I'm trying to copy what I'm hearing from the song. Anyway, I did change my guitar sound here a little bit. I moved to a sound that has even less gain. So less gain, still using my Marshall Plexi profile here. And I also split the coil on my bridge position humbucker because Malcolm Young played a guitar that was different than the guitar that Angus Young played. Angus played the Gibson SG with the full humbuckers in it, but Malcolm played a Gretsch-style guitar with a Filtertron pickup in it. Now, a Filtertron is still a humbucker. It's got two coils, so you have that hum canceling, but it's a much lower output humbucker, and it sounds kind of lo-fi and twangy, and that's what Malcolm Young preferred to use. And he would have been plugged into some type of Marshall 2, a vintage Marshall, or something that was voiced like a vintage Marshall. Again, you're not using a modern distorted sound to play AC/DC. You'd use a modern distorted sound to play like Metallica or heavy metal music or something like that. Those vintage Marshalls were not that distorted. And so Angus Young, for a lot of his rhythm guitar parts, he didn't really add much gain. Instead, he would plug into a Marshall and just like turn it up so loud that he would get kind of a natural breakup. And it's just a beautiful sound. And if you listen carefully to a lot of AC/DC stuff, you're like, you know, those guitar tones are not that distorted. But they're not exactly clean. They're somewhere in between. And usually it's like the amp was kind of set cleanly, but it was turned up so loud, you got some of this natural breakup. So I tried to approximate that with this profile here. And I think it sounds pretty good. And then I split the coil on my bridge humbucker. I can go into a split coil mode. And what that does is it lowers the output. It creates a much thinner sound. Here's the full humbucker. And then here's split coil. Full humbucker. Split coil. Okay, and it actually sounds somewhat like a Filtertron pickup. It kind of accomplishes the same thing. So I've got a little bit of versatility with this guitar because it is wired for me to coil tap, split the coils. I think it's actually a coil tap. There's a difference. Go look it up. I don't want to explain it here. So anyway, that's what I'm using for my rhythm guitar sounds. And let's talk about all the different rhythm guitar parts. So that's the first one that comes in, and it fits right underneath what Angus is doing because he's playing off of that B string, so we have a B power chord here. And then a little bit later, another part is introduced on top of this that sounds like this. And here I'm using a B power chord. I'm going down a whole step to an A power chord. And then I'm going all the way to E. So let's think about this movement. If we're counting B as our tonic pitch, then B to A is a flat 7. And B to E is a 4th. So if you think about like numbered chord progressions, a 1, 4, 5, or 1, 5, 6, 2, 4, this would be a 1, flat 7, 4. Real simple part, you know, just a few power chords here, but it just adds another layer. It adds some more movement. It adds some more harmonic content. And as you're going to hear me say a lot, and the rest of this podcast, Malcolm Young was just a brilliant rhythm guitar player who knew how to create these little catchy power chord riffs that are just so irresistible and make all of these songs sound so classic. So 1 flat 7 4, the chords are B, A, and E. And if you know anything about the harmonized major scale or how keys work, you might be thinking, wait a minute. B, A, and E, that's actually the 1, 4, and 5 chord out of the E major scale. E is 1, A is the 4 chord, and B is the 5 chord. And you're correct. And what we're doing here is we're basically playing the 1, 4, and 5 chords out of the key of E, but we're centering on its 5th degree, B, and we're using B as the tonic. And when you do that, it's called B mixolydian mode. And if B is your tonic, then it makes more sense to number the interval structure between the chords from the B. It's still okay I look at this and I'm like, oh, well, B, A, and E is 5, 4, and 1 out of the E scale. Like, I can't help but realize that. But then I kind of take things a step farther and I'm like, well, but B is my actual tonic pitch here. So my ear isn't hearing 5, 4, 1. It's actually hearing 1 flat 7 4. When I come back to B, my ear hears B is 1. It hears B is the tonal center. If this music were composed in a manner where we heard E as 1, E is the tonal center, then you would want to number things from E. But it's because the music is centering on the 5th degree B and it's the tonal center. That's what makes it a mode. That's why it's called mixolydian mode instead of the E major scale, even though it's the same notes and chords, because your ear is not hearing things from the E. It's hearing things from the B, and that changes the sound. And this makes sense that we would have a mixolydian chord progression, because remember this part was in the B mixolydian mode as well. So these notes and chords are straight out of the E scale, focusing on B. That's B mixolydian mode. See Fretboard Theory Volume 1 for a full-length discussion and explanation on modes. Now, I forgot to mention that while I didn't change anything on my guitar, I did switch over to a Marshall profile that had just a little bit more gain, because for this particular part, I felt like it was less clean on the recording. It needed a little bit more gain on it. So I added a little bit more gain there. And then later in the song, there's another guitar. Well, that guitar that I just introduced drops out, and there's just a B power chord that sustains while you have that first guitar still underneath there, although it's kind of pulled down a little bit in the mix, but you know. You know, I didn't mention that with that first guitar part that I've got a 16th note strum pattern there, and I was using some palm muting technique, so it's not completely open. Instead, I'm resting my palm on the strings back at the bridge. It's kind of a tricky little syncopated rhythm. You got to play consistent 16th notes, 1E and a 2E and a 3E and a 4E and a... Then you need to get a feel for where you accent. When do you accent a downstroke? When do you accent an upstroke? And how do you create that pattern? In this case, it's... So it's like down, up, down, down, up, 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 up. I'm really hearing those upstrokes in there. And then after the upstrokes, up, 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 down, down. I accent some of those downstrokes. Harder than you think. Anyways, I want to move on to the next rhythm guitar part. I wish I could play the song for you so you could hear it in context with the vocals and everything, and then I could teach it to you. That's what I did in the video, and well, it got blocked. But gosh, this song is so popular. You might recognize these parts even without the rest of the instrumentation and the vocals. But the next part is where the vocals say, and I was shaking at the knees. I'm not going to attempt to try to sing like Brian Johnson, but and the guitars go. And the drums and everything are kind of breaking along with the guitars there. And that's the same chords. A and E, all power chords, but it's a different part. It's slightly different than the other parts, so it's helping this song to grow and build and change. You know, this song is not something that you can easily break down into like verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, with like, it just doesn't really follow that same sort of structure. They really just kind of were playing off of this riff in this same groove throughout most of the song, and then just doing a little bit of variation, adding some layers of guitar, so just to keep the listener interested and to try to make each section sound a little different than the others. And you might laugh at some of these simple little parts here, you know, just doing something like this with all the music coming together and breaking on those chords. But this is why AC/DC were geniuses. They could come up with these simple, catchy little, you know, riffs or chord riffs and hooks that just sounded so great, and we all want to listen to and play. So let's keep going. The next part is the chorus, because he says, "You've been thunderstruck," and then the guitar plays this. Do you recognize that? That's kind of the big chorus there. Using the same chords, B, A. Then I lift my finger off that A power chord and just play the open fifth and fourth strings. And then I play E, A, E. A syncopated. You want to pay attention to when you play on the beat or off the beat. Again, Malcolm Young was just so brilliant at just coming up with these little rhythms and everything that just made the song so great. Might seem a little strange that you lift your finger off that A there and play just some of the open strings. But, you know, we guitar players do that all the time. You know, if we're just strumming with basic chords and stuff, you know, I'll switch keys here for a second. It's, you know, we have to learn how to lift our fingers early to go to the next chord so we can get to the next chord in time, you know. Or maybe think about a song like Gloria by Them, featuring Van Morrison, you know. E, D, and A. With all these open strings in between that don't entirely make sense, like from a music theory perspective, like, okay, well, those open strings maybe don't always go with that key or chord, but we put them in there anyway, and sometimes they work great, and we kind of get used to that. We get used to pulling our fingers up a little early and putting some open strings in there. And so I really view this rhythm guitar part as the same thing, and I don't think Malcolm Young probably thought much about it. I think he was just feeling it, you know? And of course, it works perfectly in the music. Coming out of this chorus, you've got a B power chord that's just sustained. You still have Angus doing the... So I don't think he's had a break yet.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And then you go into kind of like another verse, or I don't know what this is, if you're going to call it an extension of the chorus. And Malcolm Young decided that he was not going to play the same thing he did previously. And because he's a guy that never runs out of good ideas, he played it a little differently, and he played this. So it's the B power chord, but before you hit it, you play its fifth F sharp, drop it down a whole step to E, and then hit that power chord. And it's just different enough that at this point in the song, I mean, we're like, what, we're a couple minutes into the song here, and about 3 minutes into the song, I'm pausing this podcast recording and going, listening to the song for reference just as I go through this lesson. And we're about 3 minutes into the song here. So here's Malcolm just introducing a new part. It's so simple, but it's just enough to continue to add to the song and to add interest for the listener. And again, it's why he is such a genius. And the next part is the guitar solo. Let me first talk about what's happening rhythmically during the guitar solo. It sounds like this. Okay, same chords, many of the same notes that were already in use, but here's Malcolm saying, hey, I never run out of ideas. I want to make this section sound a little bit different. So how about we play over this? And in this case, you're actually starting on the E and then going to B. Then you have some single notes. E, F sharp, A. And then A power chord, E power chord. So here it is, Malcolm, you know, drawing from his deep well of rock riffs that never end to come up with just yet another variation. And you know, it creates this great rock groove. Like, you know, he was really talented at this. He wasn't just throwing things out in a new order or creating some variation. Like, he was actually feeling a particular riff and groove that when we listen back to it with other instruments and everything, we want to, like, you know, we want to bounce to the music or stomp our foot and, you know, and say, yeah, that sounds good, you know? Anyway, coming out of the guitar solo, the chords change to... And then you have the vocals do that... which you hear at the beginning of the song. And so it kind of is reintroduced here. And that's kind of interesting, too, to think about the vocal melody there. That's a minor third there, D natural. And then it kind of goes up to a D sharp, the major third of the B chord. So it's... And that's E, D, F sharp, E, B. That's kind of out of the minor pentatonic, which we'll talk about in a minute because the guitar solo is using some of that too. There's a minor pentatonic mixed in there. So... Here we go, AC/DC, never running out of ideas. They come out of the solo and they're like, hey, how about we come back to the vocal part of the top of the song? And Malcolm says, sure, and I'll follow it with B and A. Flat 7. Or rather, tonic, flat 7. My phone or something is talking to me. I don't know what I said or what I did. Anyway, from here, the song goes eventually builds back up into the chorus. And then these guys aren't done. They come up with yet another variation here. This is where the lyrics say, yeah, it's all right, we're doing fine. And Malcolm's part is... Basically, B power chord to an E power chord, but with a couple of single notes in between, F sharp and G sharp. So, F sharp and G sharp. Are you like me and you're thinking, you know, if I could just come up with a couple of really cool riffs or hooks just once, that would be awesome. And here AC/DC, like, just doing it multiple times over and over in the same song. This is why they're paid the big bucks, people. Anyway, eventually everything comes back to B for resolution and the song ends. You hear the lead part reintroduced and it slows down. The song ends. But before we wrap up this podcast episode, I want to go back to the guitar solo section and talk a little bit about the scales and what's happening there. So we already talked about what's happening with the rhythm guitar. And I don't really know this solo, but I did kind of take a listen to it and looked at the tab and worked out something that sounds similar. And Angus is doing something like this. And I need to go to full humbucker mode on my guitar. And I'm going to need to go to a higher gain setting as well, just so I have a fuller sound with more sustain here for the lead. So let me talk about what I'm doing here. I'm in the position of pentatonic pattern one at the seventh fret, because that's where B is. So think about putting your index finger on B and playing B minor pentatonic. And thinking about the kinds of bends you would typically put in there, you know? And then there's a little bit of this, where I'm actually adding in the major sixth. That's going to be the G sharp on the second string. So that's kind of done a lot. That's done a lot in blues bass music where you're using the minor pentatonic there. Think about Mary Jane's Last Dance by Tom Petty. Kind of that dirty, in-your-face blues sound where you're kind of mixing some major and minor intervals. And that's what's happening here. You might think, okay, well, why B minor pentatonic when B Mixolydian mode is actually a major mode? It's based on a major triad. So why not use B major pentatonic? And that would be smart thinking because usually the rule of thumb is you play minor pentatonic over minor chords, major pentatonic over major chords, but then you can break the rules and you can play minor over major, and this creates the blues rock sound that we all know and love. And if you look at the notes in the minor pentatonic scale, all of them but one are actually in the B Mixolydian mode. So here's B Mixolydian mode. So that's B, C sharp, D sharp, E, F sharp, and then G sharp, A, and B. B minor pentatonic is B, D, E, F sharp, A. So B is in both scales. D, well, D natural is in the minor pentatonic. Yeah, D major in the D Mixolydian mode. So there's a difference. I'll come back to that in a second. But the rest of the notes in the pentatonic, like the E and the F sharp and the A, they're in the Mixolydian mode. So they're very close here. The difference is that the minor pentatonic has the minor third D, but the Mixolydian mode has the major third D sharp. And the minor pentatonic is minor third. But this works because in rock music and blues-based rock music, which is basically what this song is, you will have major thirds and minor thirds. You often do this sort of movement here, you know. That's the minor third to the major third. Think about Chuck Berry stuff, right? Sometimes you bend to it. That's kind of an important part of the blues sound, and it's a big part of the rock sound as well. So the minor pentatonic and Mixolydian mode can go together really well, and they'll create a blues sound. Now, sometimes if you're using Mixolydian mode, you don't want to introduce that blues element. You might want to keep it strictly Mixolydian mode. Just stick with that major third. So you might hear that in Fretboard Theory Volume 1, when I introduce the modes, I give you lists of songs that use each mode. And so some of those, you can kind of tell. Like, if you're listening to a song and you're like, this is Mixolydian mode, but you're like, but I'm not really hearing any bluesy elements to it, that's kind of your cue to stay away from the minor thirds. On the other hand, if you do hear bluesy elements to it, then that's your cue that there must be some minor thirds in there. So that's what's happening. And I don't know the whole solo, but I just kind of listened to it, worked out a couple of licks, like what I played for you earlier. And I noticed that he kind of built, there's times when he moves all the way up into pentatonic pattern 4, which would begin at the 14th fret. There's B on the 5th string. And you start hearing him do his signature licks like this sort of thing. Just minor pentatonic stuff, and it works wonderful over this. There might be some other things mixed in with the solo. Now, if I was going to play this song in a band, I don't know that I would go through and try to learn this solo note for note. It might be a difficult solo to learn that way, honestly, because it's kind of hard to hear it. It's really tucked under other layers of instrumentation. And it's also not one of Angus's like most memorable solos, unlike, say, Back in Black or You Shook Me All Night Long, where it's like I don't know. Those solos are just like so kind of clearly defined and so memorable. It's a little easier for me to remember them. Whereas this one, Angus is just kind of filling space, which is really what the song needs and what the song called for here. And so it works that way. So if I were going to play this in a band, I would probably just get some general ideas from the solo, figure out, you know, the scale patterns I'm going to use, some general ideas of licks and some bends, and I would probably just fill space and just improvise or make up my own thing. All right, podcast episode 113 is a wrap, and hopefully now you understand the song Thunderstruck better and have more of appreciation for it. You know, this is not a terribly difficult song to learn if you're just focusing on the rhythm guitar part, so you can easily find the tab online and pull up a copy of the song and play along, and hopefully I've illuminated some of the details here, so instead of just memorizing something from the tab, like you kind of understand the key and the chord progression and how the scales and the lead lines and everything relate. Hey, that's what the Guitar Music Theory podcast is all about, and it's also what my website is all about. So if you are not yet enrolled in a free video course at my website, head over to guitarmusictheory.com, answer the questions I ask you about your playing, and then I'll get you connected with the right course that you should be focusing on right now. So whether you're still a beginner level player, or you're intermediate, or you're advanced, whether you want to work on your rhythm guitar skills, or your lead guitar skills, or you just want to understand music theory better, I have a free course for you, so head over to guitarmusictheory.com and enroll in your free video course now. I will put a link in the podcast show notes. Don't forget to subscribe to today's sponsor, the Basketball History 101 podcast. I give you a link for that in the episode show notes as well. All right, guitar engineers, thanks for listening. I'm Desi Serna. Before you go, be sure to subscribe to this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, and leave me a great review. Then keep playing and stay tuned for more.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.